us. So Song of Solomon chapter 1, we're going to start in verse 7 tonight. Solomon writes this to his bride-to-be. This is a poem. This is kind of a love song, and so this is part 2. It says, "Tell me, O you, whom my soul loves, where do you pasture your flock? Where do you make it lie down at noon? For why should I be like one who veils herself besides the flock of your companions?" That's what she says. And then Solomon says, "If you yourself do not know, most beautiful among women, go forth on the trail of the flock and pasture your young goats by the tents of the shepherds." And then in verse 9, Solomon says this. He says, "To me, my darling, you are like my mare among the chariots of Pharaoh. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments and your neck with strings of beads. We will make for you ornaments of gold with beads of silver. While the king was at his table, my perfume gave forth its fragrance. My beloved is to me a pouch of myrrh which lies all night between my breasts." Yes, the Bible says that. "My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blossoms in the vineyards of," I don't know how to pronounce that, we'll say Texas, "in the vineyards of Texas. How beautiful you are, my darling, how beautiful you are. Your eyes are like doves. How handsome you are, my beloved, and so pleasant. Indeed, our couch is luxuriant. The beams of our houses are cedars, our rafters, cypresses." Now look in verse 18. Next slide. Or chapter 2, verse 1. Sorry. "I am the rose of Sharon, the lily of valleys. Like a lily among the thorns, so is my darling among the maidens. Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. In his shade I took great delight and sat down, and his fruit was sweet to my taste." Verse 4, listen to this. "He has brought me to his banquet hall, and his banner over me is love." And she says to Solomon, "Sustain me with raisin cakes. Refresh me with apples because I am love sick. Let his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me." And Solomon says to her, "I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, that you do not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases." Now, a lot of that you probably read and you're like, okay, what does that mean? I don't get it, but it seems really hot, really sexy, and someday I'm going to want some of that, right? There's a part of you that's saying that tonight, and I want to invite you tonight. We're going to talk about what a date is and what a date looks like. Listen up. If you were here last week, we looked at the first 6 verses, and Solomon has this conversation with this girl he's going to marry, and they talk in the first 6 verses all about character. Character is all they talk about, and that's what we looked at last week, and we looked at the fact that character comes first, that character is always going to be consistent, and that character will always outlast looks. Okay, so if you missed last week, I would encourage you to get on our website, watermarkstudents.com, and listen to last week. Get caught up, and it'll help you understand week 2 a little bit better. So we pick up in verse 7. And she says, "Tell me, Solomon, whom my soul loves, where do you pasture your flock? Where do you make it lie down at noon? For why should I be like one who veils herself?" She is asking Solomon where they can hang out. And what I want you to understand tonight is that a date, if we're going to define it tonight, for you, a date is time spent together where? In public. A real good definition of a date for wherever you're at is that it's time spent together in public. She says she's going to come see him when? At noon, out in the open, where he's working, out in public. That's where she's going to go see him. So she's into Solomon. They're having this good conversation, and she says, "I'm going to come see you at noon." And then she says, "And why should I be like," I'll give you one guess as to who the women were during that time that veiled themselves. Can you guess? You can go ahead and scream it if you want to. Prostitutes. Prostitutes back then veiled themselves. So she's saying, why come see you at night? Why try and sell my body to you when I could just come see you at noon totally out in public? So the beginning of a date will always start with time spent together in public. Okay, in public. And then later on in this passage, she says what? She says that he's at Solomon's banqueting hall. And the best thing I can compare that to is like Luby's, okay? Like tons of people are eating and Solomon owns it, okay? So it's not Luby's, it's Solomon's. And Solomon's got this huge banqueting hall and there's tons of people eating and they are eating there in public. They are spending time together in public. Now, what I want you to understand tonight is why it's important for you to be out in the open. Okay, when you are looking at what is the definition of a date, and I'm not talking about dating tonight, I'm talking about a date, because there's a difference. There's a difference between going on a date with somebody and dating that person. Next week, we're going to talk about dating, but tonight, I want you to get a picture of what a godly, kind of biblical date looks like. So time spent together in public. My wife and I were best friends for 2 years, and then a friend of mine set us up on a double date. He really liked my wife's best friend, and he wanted to hang out with her, and he was like, hey, will you and Holly, I know you guys are buddies, will you set up a double date so I can hang out with her? And I was like, yeah, Holly and I will think that's fun. So we got reservations at this incredible restaurant south of Branson. It's called Top of the Rock. How many of you have been there? Yes. Yeah, some of you have been there. And so you know that this is the place to be in the Ozarks. When the sun goes down, it is the perfect place to be. And so we go and have this date, and I start to look at my wife, a few hours that we spent together in public with some friends. And after 2 years, I looked over at her across the table, and I started thinking, I could see myself doing more than just being this girl's friend. I could see myself going on dates with her. I could see myself eventually dating her. And so we kept going on dates. And then we got more serious. And it all started, I want you to get this tonight, it all started with us being together in public and spending time together with friends. And that is how a good relationship will start. A good relationship is never going to start in the backseat of a car. Okay? A good relationship is not ever going to start in somebody's bed. Okay? A good relationship is never going to start in an inappropriate way. So be encouraged with that tonight. Say, if I am going to go on a date, I am going to spend that time with somebody, and I'm going to do it in public. And I want you to get that word tonight, time. Guys, I'm going to give you just something. This is free, okay? If you want to get someday to a girl's heart, spend time with them. Okay, that is one of the greatest gifts that you can give to a girl, is to spend time with them. One of the things I love doing, like I said, I went on my first date with my wife at a restaurant, and I love to just go eat with her somewhere and just sit at the table and linger and linger and linger, and we just sit and we talk. And that's some of my favorite time. And my wife, she absolutely loves to just spend time out in the open, and that encourages her and blesses her. And so, guys, I just want you to know that if you want to be in a good relationship and have a date go well, give your time to somebody. Don't get fast food, okay? Go somewhere nicer, okay? Spend quality and quantities of time with the girl when you're on a date. Okay, now, there's a balance here, okay? I don't want you to think that I'm telling you tomorrow to go out for 6 hours and ditch all your friends and forget about all of them. Remember that this is totally a tool for the future as well, okay? So when you get into college and you have a relationship, you start to go on a date or two dates or three dates, don't forget who God has put in your life to strengthen you, to encourage you, to grow you in your relationship with Him, don't let your time be totally consumed with somebody that you're dating or that you want to go on a date with. Don't stay out all night. You're going to set yourself up for failure. Okay, so spending time together in public. I got to go to a little thing last night called the Final Four, and we got these unbelievable tickets at an incredible price. My wife and I went down there. My aunt lives in San Antonio, so we had free babysitting. And we just got to sit in our seats for 5.5 hours together, just talking. She loves basketball, so we just talked about basketball. I was like in heaven for almost 6 hours, and that was incredible. And I love doing stuff like that with my wife. I absolutely love just spending time with my wife. And guys and girls, I want you to get this tonight. Don't miss this. You can have so much fun. Now, I know you might want to be alone with somebody, but you can have fun out in the open. You don't have to be by yourselves. You don't have to be by yourselves to have fun on a date. Do it out in groups. Hang out with each other in groups. Okay? Okay, so time spent together in public. Now, watch this. Watch what happens on this date between Solomon and his girl. Write this down. Respect and encouragement are shown towards each other. Respect and encouragement are shown towards each other. Okay, so respect and encouragement. So starting in verse 9, chapter 1, verse 9, Solomon says to the girl, "To me, my darling, you are like my mare." That's a horse. Now, I should probably stop and explain that, okay? Because, guys, if you stop and call a girl a horse rightfully, she will backhand you, okay? So I need to explain to you what Solomon means here. Why in the world would he call her a mare? A mare in biblical times was a white steed, okay? A white horse. And a steed during that time was the most costly horse, and the steed always rode in an army in the front and went out in front of the entire army. It was the most valuable horse, completely white, and everybody knew that it was worth more than any other horse that was out there as a mare. And he is saying, "You are costly to me. You have so much value." And when she hears that, ladies, get this, when she hears Solomon call her a mare, a horse, a white steed, her heart starts to race. She's like, "I can't believe I just got called a horse. Like, I can't believe that. I can't believe he just called me a mare." Incredible encouragement, incredible respect that Solomon starts to show towards this girl. Now, after verse 9, he says this to her. He says in verse 10, this is on a date. He says, "Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments and your neck with strings of beads." He's complimenting her on the way she looks. Okay, now, I want you to really try and grab a hold of this tonight, because our culture has jacked this whole thing up where guys compliment girls, and the compliments that guys give to girls are not the most appropriate compliments. Can we just say it that way? Right? I mean, you watch TV for 10 seconds, and there's a guy calling a girl something that only that girl's husband should be calling her, okay, or complimenting her on. He compliments her on her cheeks and her neck, and he stops there, okay? He does not go south from the neck. He says, "Your cheeks and your neck look great." Amazing. Cheeks and the neck. And guys, hear me say tonight that it is great for you to say that. It is totally appropriate for you to say to a girl, "You look nice. You look nice tonight." But if you come up to my wife or any of the ladies here and you start complimenting her on things south of the neck, we're going to have major issues, because those parts are to be only complimented by the person that that young lady is going to marry someday. And I'm really serious about this. Listen up. Only the person you marry gets to compliment you on your butt, your chest, your legs, whatever gets you going, that waits until marriage. Did you get that? Totally inappropriate for me to ever say anything to a girl that's attractive south of her neck. Okay? Now, as a married person, I love complimenting my wife, and I am absolutely passionate about telling my wife what looks good, where it looks good. And in fact, this afternoon I was sitting on the couch and... No, hey, I'm being for real, okay? Because I want you, when you get married someday, guys, I don't care if your wife is wearing sweatpants and a sweatshirt, your job is to compliment her on how she looks, regardless of what she's wearing. If you look in chapter 1 of Song of Solomon, the girl is freaking out about how she looks. She says, my skin is burnt, I'm unattractive, don't look at me. And after he starts complimenting her, chapter 2, verse 1, she calls herself a rose because he is building her up. He is respecting her, and she does a complete 180 in the way she feels about herself. Look at that. She says, I'm the rose of Sharon. I am an expensive, valuable, beautiful rose. I'm like a lily among the thorns. Compared to all the women out there, I am a lily. I am gorgeous. And it all starts with Solomon saying, you are beautiful. Your cheeks are gorgeous. Your neck is incredible. And right before that, he says, you're like a mare. You're the most valuable, costly thing. He is building her up. He is respecting her. And guess what? She responds. And she starts building him up. Watch this. And girls, guys love getting respect, and guys love being complimented. Even if they don't let on to it, guys love to be encouraged and built up. Watch this. She says in verse 16, how handsome you are, my beloved, and so pleasant. How handsome you are, and so pleasant. And then earlier in verse 13, she says, my beloved is to me a pouch of myrrh, which lies all night between my breasts. That myrrh is the most expensive perfume that a woman can have. She is saying to him that you are more valuable to me than anything. The most costly perfume that somebody could buy is myrrh, and I am comparing Solomon, my guy, to that. You are costly. She's saying the same thing to him. Now let me just stop here and say, if you go on a date and the respect is only going one way, you need to run. If you go on a date, an encouragement, and I'm talking about exceedingly encouraging, if that's not going on both sides, you've got to run. Because if they're not encouraging you and respecting you on your first date, guess what? It ain't going to happen later. That doesn't change. That has to do with somebody's character and who they are. And you don't want somebody, ladies, you don't want somebody that doesn't open the door for you. You don't want somebody that forgets to build you up. And you don't want somebody that compliments you on your body and your body parts that are reserved for one person. So if you're in a relationship and you're dating somebody, or if you go on a date and you're disrespected, you need to run. Bottom line. And she's responding and she's saying, you are like myrrh. And watch this. After she says you are costly, She says, you are pleasant. She says, you're handsome and you are pleasant. Look at verse 16. She says, you are pleasant. That word pleasant, this is going to be really cool. When she says pleasant, that word in the Hebrew is the same word that David uses to describe his relationship with Jonathan. And David describes his relationship with Jonathan, as one that's pleasant. And he is David's buddy. He's his best friend. And she is saying about Solomon, you are like my best friend. Not only is she attracted to him like she wants to date him, she thinks, you are my buddy. I could hang out with you all the time. And when you go on a date, if you can't see yourself hanging out with them and just having fun like you do with your other friends, it's not going to work as well. When you get older and you get married to somebody, you need to marry your best friend. You need to see that person like they could be your absolute best friend. Now, of course, you're going to be attracted to them and all those things, but if you don't get along with them, and if you can't just hang out, there's not going to be any chemistry there to hold you together during hard times. It is so important for you to find somebody that you are best friends with. My wife and I love hanging out. She is my best friend. We irritate each other like best friends do, and we can get back together after fights just like best friends do. Consistently, we're best friends. So she responds and she says, after she says you're costly, after she says you're pleasant to me, then she says, I delight to sit in his shade. Now, in biblical times, if you said you sit in somebody's shade, that means you're protected. Okay, when David talks about sitting in God's shadow, David's being chased by Philistines. He's saying, I feel protected. And look at this, I feel secure. She's saying, I feel protected and secure when I'm around you. Now, just like I said about respect, ladies, if you don't feel secure when you're with a guy, you need to run. If he makes you feel insecure, he's not a real man, and you need to flee from him, okay? And you can pick up on things like that on just a couple dates. If you don't feel protected, guys, one of our number one roles, biblically speaking, in relationships, is for you to be a protector. That's it. That is one of the main responsibilities. For husbands, remember, this is a tool for your future. I want you to take notes and hold on to this for years and use this as a tool when you find somebody that you think you're going to marry. The three main responsibilities for a man in the Old Testament is priest, spiritually leading, a provider, and a prophet, somebody that will speak truth. One of those, provider, a protector, somebody that will watch over his family. And guys, when you get older and you get into a relationship, you have to be willing to do everything you can to make a girl feel secure and a protector. She has to say about you, I feel like I am sitting in the shade and nothing can faze me because I am with an incredible guy. So she's complimenting him, he's complimenting her, and then you are not going to believe what happens after this. Watch this in chapter 2, verse 5. Look at this. Things are getting hot. They've been in the banqueting hall. They've been complimenting each other. And she says in verse 5, sustain me with raisin cakes, refresh me with apples, because I am lovesick. Let his left hand be under my head, his right hand embrace me. What position is that? Let me ask you this, is it vertical or horizontal? Let his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. She is coming on to Solomon pretty hard and pretty quick. It is getting hot. Up here too, it's getting hot. And she is coming on to Solomon, and guys, look at this. Get this. Guys, he tells her no. He says, the guy steps up, and he says, do not arouse, do not awaken my love. Do not arouse and do not awaken my love. Solomon's girl is going crazy. And he steps up and he says, no. And what God is looking for in men is guys that will step up and say no. One of our high school guys last semester started a Facebook group called Men Say No. Jake Fleming, where is Jake? Jake, and tons of guys started joining that Facebook group because they wanted to say no to lust. They wanted to say no to sexual sin. And it's guys like that stepping up and saying, I am going to say no, and I want there to be a legacy about me that says no to sexual sin. Guys, God is calling us to lead in this area. I love that this verse has the guy stepping up. And just so you know, just so you understand how crazy she's going, raisin cakes, if you look at 2 Samuel chapter 6, if you look and you go back, David, they're moving the ark, David's celebrating, dancing in his underwear, and he's saying, God is being so good to everybody. David says, send raisin cakes home with every husband, every wife, and tell them to go home and multiply. Raisin cakes were believed back then to be an aphrodisiac. They believed that the seeds that were in the raisin cakes were connected somehow to seeds that would produce children, okay? And so she is saying, bring on the raisin cakes. I want you to get a perfectly clear picture of what she is wanting, what she is offering, and the guy says no. She's not saying, I want a kiss. She's saying, I want way more than that. I am love sick. I want to get horizontal with you. And he's saying, no. Y'all, we are just talking about the Bible, and I don't understand what is so hard about that tonight. Y'all can't stop laughing. I am lovesick, she says, and the guy steps up and says, absolutely, in kind of a rude and confident way, no. Now is not the time. Solomon knows there's coming a time, but now is not the time. A good date always shows self-restraint. Self-restraint. Write that down if you haven't written it down yet. Number three, a good date will always show self-restraint. Now, guys or ladies, if you're reading this and hearing this tonight and you're like, man, I am struggling big time with self-restraint, I want you to get Romans 13, verses 13 and 14 tonight. Look at this. Paul says, let us behave properly as in the day, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual promiscuity and sensuality, not in strife and jealousy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make, get this, no provision for the flesh in regard to its lusts. Write down just a few of those words. Make no provision for the flesh. Make no provision for the flesh. Your prayer should be that until you get married, you will make no provision for the flesh. When you're feeling like Solomon's girl was feeling, she's saying, sustain me with raisin cakes. I am lovesick. Make no provision for the flesh. Do not awaken or arouse your love until the right time. If you read that tonight and you know that that is a struggle, you know that if you go on a date and you're driving your date to go somewhere in public and you are going to be tempted to make a turn and go park your car somewhere, guess what? You're not ready to go on a date. Because you're wanting to make a turn and go take what somebody else's for for yourself. You're wanting to take somebody's future spouse and take advantage of them, and if you have no self-restraint, you are not ready to go on a date. You are not ready to go on a date if you know that this is going to be a big-time struggle for you. If you're here tonight and you're thinking, I have totally and completely blown it in this area, do not feel like you are defeated. God can give you, if you are here tonight and you've had sex over and over and over again, God can give you a clean heart. He can give you a clean mind. He can give you a second virginity. He can clean up all your junk. He can forgive you for whatever you've done. But if you're here tonight and you know that that's going to continue to be a temptation, you are not ready to go on a date. Because you know in your heart and you know in your mind that ultimately you're going to be disrespecting somebody else's future spouse. If you're here tonight and you've been on a few dates with somebody and you're thinking, that is the person I'm going to marry, it doesn't matter, I'm going to have it someday, I might as well have it now, I promise you 99% of you will not marry the person that you're interested in high school. You just won't. Yeah, there's 1%, but 99, let's say there's 150 of you here tonight, one or two of you maybe, but the majority no. Your future spouse is out there somewhere and you want them right now to show self-restraint, right? You don't want them out there letting somebody else have their hands all over them. You don't want somebody out there complimenting your future spouse. And you want for yourself, you want to be able to come to a place someday where you find the person that you want to marry and you want to say to them, I have waited and I have given you everything. You have to show restraint on a date. I was going to wait until next week to share this, but I'll just share it tonight. When I got married on my wedding night, my wife brought me a journal. And so we're sitting in our hotel room, and she gives me this journal, and I open it up, and she's been writing me letters for 10 years. 10 years. Telling me how she's been showing restraint, waiting for me. She went on dates with one person before she met me, and that was in college. And she thought that guy, was possibly somebody she would marry, and she kept writing. And she kept writing letter after letter after letter. I am waiting, I am praying for you, I am praying that you are showing restraint, and I want you to know that I can't wait to meet you, I can't wait to be with you, and I can't tell you how much of an encouragement that was to me. And I can also tell you that it was very convicting for me, because I couldn't bring the same letters to her. Because there were so many times in past relationships and past dates that I did not show 100% restraint. And I couldn't write the same letter to her. And so in 10 years, you will be in one of two places. You could be in this place in 3-4 years after some of you seniors go to college. You might want to get married. And I want you to know that you will be in one of two places. You will either have shown restraint, or you will not have. And you'll have to give an account to somebody someday that you marry. And you can say, like my wife said, Mike, I have waited all my life for you, and I've shown restraint, and I've prayed for you every day. Or you can be like me and say, I'm bringing you leftovers. I'm bringing pieces, but not all. But the incredible thing about what Jesus did on the cross is that he canceled all that crap. He canceled all my junk. He canceled all my lust. He canceled all my selfishness. He canceled every mistake that I made. And he has given me an incredible marriage, an incredible relationship with an amazing girl. And I want you to know that there's freedom in Christ. If you've made mistakes, if you're here tonight and you're beating yourself up, know that you can live in victory and that you can start tonight to show restraint for the person that you're going to date someday that's going to be your spouse. So that's part two tonight. Next week, Solomon's going to get ready for his wedding. It's going to be a fun message, and then we're going to actually stop in the Song of Solomon, and then next week I'm going to jump ahead to a little passage in the New Testament, because let me tell you, you can just wait until you get married, and you can read after the wedding in the Song of Solomon, okay? Now all of you are going to be going home like, what happened? Just wait, because I'm just going to take you up to the wedding, and then we're going to stop, okay? Let me pray for you, and then we are actually, let's do two songs. Jeff, you'll have to forgive me because I kept talking and talking and talking. You'll have to forgive me. We had four songs planned for y'all. Let's do two, and then you guys, I'll give you a couple announcements. Come on up. You guys can set up. There's just going to be three people up here. We're going to do a little acoustic set. Maybe we'll have time for more. Let's do three. Y'all want to do three? Let's do three. Okay, let me pray. Father, thanks so much for these leaders and students that are here tonight, God. Lord, I just want to say thanks for getting me through my talk tonight. I feel so convicted about mistakes that I've made in my past. And Lord, I know that there are students that are here tonight that have made mistakes and want to find freedom in you. And so I just pray that that your spirit would encourage them. And I know that there are godly guys and girls here tonight that are saving everything in their heart, that are saving everything in their mind, they're saving their souls, everything that's in them, they are saving for the person that you have out there somewhere that they're going to marry someday. So I just pray that they would be encouraged tonight to continue to run the race and fight the good fight. And God, I pray that tonight before we leave, we would just be real with you, that we would sing praises to you and just bless your name.